Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
6:10 in the morning, maybe 85, 84, 85 in the next couple of days, but you can feel it coming, can't you? Sun's setting a little earlier. It's a little cooler. Right in time for football season, you get a little bit of fall. The Bears put the suck in suck this weekend again. And,
oh, my gosh.
Hamp will discuss this morning. So will Adam Hogue. Think of Adam Hogue as more the doctor and Hamp as the angry patient they dissect the Bears.
They were able to stitch his head back together, though.
They were. Well, yeah. That's good news for all of us. And Colin Kaepernick is an idiot, but he's an idiot with rights like the rest of us. And he has the right to say an incredibly stupid thing or do an incredibly stupid thing. And I think he did just that this weekend, which I'll put the finishing touches on his NFL career sooner than later. Unless he can play. Well, if he can play, the NFL will find a job for him. But expect him to be leaving the 49ers soon.
He may be escorted out by some of his teammates.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're talking about sitting down during the anthem in the midst of an incredible stretch of poor performances at a time where nobody's talking about the issue that he's talking about, except as a continuing protest. In other words, why now? What was special about this weekend? And did you miss the memo on players beating up their wives? I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yeah.
At 7 o'clock hour, we'll tackle this. And, of course, one of the bigger stories of the weekend, and rightfully so, is Dwayne Wade's cousin was murdered. On the way, we can call it an accidental shooting. She was murdered on the way to register her child. The symbolism of this is a woman is pushing one of her four children in a stroller to register them for school and minding her own business, who was apparently shot in gangland crossfire by a couple of dumbasses who, again, can't seem to hit their target. So they decide to hit innocent people, both of whom were brothers on probation, one of which is wearing an ankle bracelet, and decided to go out and start shooting somebody. How are these animals not in jail? How did they not stay in jail? And what is wrong with the legal system that these people walk? The police superintendent, Eddie Johnson, said, "You got any magic? Why don't you show me, because I could use some."
Mm-hmm.
And later on, as you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, Gary McCarthy will be on with us, former superintendent, who knows the job from the inside out as well. And if that weren't enough on a Monday, Anthony Weiner has gone back to taking pictures of the little Weiner. And not only taking pictures, but taking pictures and sending them to a woman while his little toddler son is curled up in bed next to him. Isn't that sweet? So at a time where Hillary Clinton and her campaign should rightfully be answering to what role Uma Abedin, Anthony Weiner's wife, and Hillary Clinton played in granting favors for the Clinton Foundation while she ran the State Department, Anthony Weiner decided to help his wife at work by taking more pictures of his little Weiner. You can't make it up. You can't. Why would you? That's the other point of that. You can't make it up, and why would you? So, Dr. Most will be on this morning in just a few minutes. Over the weekend, I hope everybody had a fine weekend. I know, Andre, you spent some time with Orion and Gloria.
I did yesterday. Worked at the TV station both days. And then, ended up yesterday playing golf with Gloria, who played wonderfully. She's a great golfer.
Annual event where Gloria and a couple of female friends go out and play golf while Orion cooks back at the house.
He was texting her saying, what time are you going to be done? The appetizers are ready. And these aren't just, you know, cheese and crackers, Steve. These are, you know, farm fresh cherries on top of cream cheese and crackers.
And he makes everything himself.
Homemade corn salsa.
But he makes it himself.
Yeah, with a little jalapeno. Yeah,
it's not like there's a cook at Orion's house. He's doing it himself.
Oh, no. Or it's Chef O. Yeah, it's Chef Orion. And I've never seen the steak.
Does he ask this question? Does he go, how long does golf take? How come you guys aren't back?
Yeah, he was texting her saying, hurry up, the wine is chilling. And he made the most delicious steaks that you could ever imagine. Homemade baked beans, too.
Dave and I weren't invited. Dave, how was your weekend?
It was nice. Took in the Luke Bryan concert at Wrigley Field on Saturday.
All age ranges for Luke Bryan, right?
Yeah. And
I mean, I was at a neighborhood thing Saturday night, and with the lovely and talented Roth family.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about how their kids, college-age kids, were all hyped to go to Luke Bryan, and some neighbors that said their teenagers were at the Luke Bryan show. So were you security, or were you there? Were you part of the throng that was enjoying Luke Bryan?
I was part of the throng, but there was a group of high school guys sitting down the road, because it seemed to me it was a predominantly female crowd.
Right.
But there were a bunch of high school dudes sitting next to us, and there were some people a little older, a little younger. There were some kids, but it was a real good time. It was a lot of fun.
Sandberg, were you there?
I was not there, but the reason why there's so many females is Luke Bryan looks really good in his jeans.
You know, these are the things I don't need to hear on a Monday because, hey, my eyes are up here. You know, Dave, right. You and I are just so tired of being treated like objects.
Just being objectified.
Why, yeah. I mean, I don't know. What, a piece of meat. That's all right. It is. That's right. All it is. How was your weekend, Sandberg?
It was busy.
You've been married over a week now.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. It's setting in the reality.
Yeah, we had a lot of kid obligations and whatnot, which are fun, but, you know, it's work, so.
I understand.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm glad you're tired on a Monday.
Yeah.
Needed a couple days off. How about you there, Mikey? Jake, Mike, people go, is it Jake or is it Mike? It's both. It depends on what I call him. Mike Jacobson, how was your weekend?
It was great. I actually was at Wrigley Field myself, but on Friday night, I saw Billy Joel.
Oh, yeah. Good show?
Oh, it was fantastic.
Cool.
Favorite Billy Joel song of all time?
Of all time?
Of all time.
I got to go.
Scenes from an Italian restaurant.
Wow. Yeah. He played that.
Bottle of Red.
Piano Man. I like Anthony's song, too. It's one of my favorites. I'm Moving Out song.
Yeah.
But he played everything.
Yeah, that was your parents' favorite song about you, I'm Moving Out.
Yeah, it was weird. They sang that when I went to the University of Iowa, the whole car ride.
Mikey works for Steve Cochran Show. Someday he'll get out of this house. How about you there, Mary Vandeveld? Good weekend?
Yeah, I was at concert, too, at Ravinia on Friday night.
What'd you see?
Train and Andy Grammer
with
a bunch
of
girls. Yeah, and afterwards I was sitting in the bathroom washing my hands, looking in the mirror.
Why were you sitting in the bathroom?
Well, standing by the sink washing my hands.
Sorry, Colin Kaepernick sitting in the bathroom.
Sit first and stand. Whatever.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And I look in the mirror and there's Pilak.
She was there as well?
Yeah, she was there with another group of friends. I'm like, Judy!
I love Train. Train.
It's pretty funny.
Train, in 1999, when I was in Detroit for the longest 3 years of my life in 1999, I had Train in when they were just getting started, and their instruments hadn't shown up. They played what they had. Like the drummer was playing
a garbage can.
Yeah. And I can't remember what he did for guitar. Somebody did something for guitar.
Air guitar?
No, it wasn't air guitar. He somehow made guitar music.
That's
but
cool.
They were great. Those guys are great. And I've stayed in touch with them a little bit through the years.
Yeah, they're pretty
good. Really nice guys, too. There's a Train Wine. Do you know about this? Because you're a wino, Vandeville.
Train Wine?
Yeah, the guys from Train, they either own all or part of a vineyard. So
cool.
Yeah.
Train Wine.
Yeah, I don't think it's called
okay.
Train.
Okay. Should have sold their wine at the thing. I didn't notice.
Stop afterwards at the card table where we're selling the wine.
Some of the bands do that now. So you know how you could buy a concert T-shirt. So you can buy. It was either City Winery and House of Blues. Different shows. You can buy. You know, like Bangles Wine or whoever the group is. And I at first thought the same thing. Like, oh, they have a vineyard. No, it's just a bottle of the house wine with a little label on it, and they charge you $40 for it.
I remember when Zamfir was big with the pan flute. The Zamfir wine never caught on. Remember that? No.
I actually knew a guy whose nickname was Zamfir.
Sorry to hear that.
How was your weekend, Steve?
You guys, we don't have time.
Oh, yeah.
No, there's no time. 6:18, it's time now for Mary Vandeveld to do your traffic. You guys don't care. I just had to ask everybody else.
We do care.
You love the beach so much, you bought a timeshare in Mexico. You figure you spent over $30,000 between the mortgage at 14% and the annual maintenance fees. Here's the painful part. You only used it twice. That's $15,000 per vacation. It's not even an all-inclusive. What are you thinking? The math on your timeshare isn't working out. If your lifestyle's changed, you're no longer able to use it. Get out of it. Timeshare Exit Team, the most trusted name in the business. Consumer Protection Company, they'll sit down with you face-to-face and talk about taking your contract back, because Timeshare Exit Team doesn't want you to pass it on to anybody, doesn't want you to try to sell it. They want you to get out of it. Schedule your free consultation today. Review your contract. Show your options. Timeshare Exit Team, 100% guarantee. They don't get paid unless you get out. They'll give you every penny back, period. Timeshare Exit Team is timeshareexitteam.com. It's 6:24. I don't want you to think I've forgotten about that little election we're having. And Trump and Hillary And Gary Johnson, here's the update on the Gary Johnson story. The original Committee on Debates deadline to decide whether or not Gary Johnson and William Weld would be included in the debates was going to be 2 weeks ago. They are now saying it'll happen sometime between the first debate at the end of September and Labor Day. So in other words, in a couple of weeks, maybe more likely the middle of September, which of course gives Gary Johnson and William Weld time to actually show up on this show and do another interview, you fools.
So the first presidential debate is the 26th, September 26th. That's the one in New York.
So it must be the 25th then. They said something
okay,
around
so
the end
have
of
to
the
be
day. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right before that then. Okay.
Yeah, and to
then
decide whether or not they're in. But they won't wait till the last minute.
Right.
Because you got to have some sort of prep, right? One of the big questions that comes out of the debate is who will play Donald Trump in the Hillary practice? I mean, get like Jimmy Fallon, don't you?
I think
Jimmy Fallon or, you know, somebody to come in who can do the insults.
Who plays Trump on Saturday Night Live?
His hairpiece.
No, I don't.
Yeah,
no, the actor, the comedian.
I don't know. They've had a couple, haven't they?
Yeah, the one guy's...
I think Daryl Hammond actually still comes in for that.
Well, Daryl Hammond's the announcer, so he's there every week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Taron Killen does a Trump.
He's left the show now. He won't be back. So, you know, I think they had a white guy playing Barack Obama, so maybe you get a black guy to play Trump.
Fred Armisen,
come on, just to be fair.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you got that going for you. Hillary Clinton has still not had a press conference. Hasn't had a press conference since 2015. These are the things, again, why would I help the Trump campaign? I don't want him to be president. But here's the deal. Hillary Clinton has to answer for the State Department nonsense, the mess of ugly, like a big pile of Christmas lights, the ties between the State Department and the Clinton Global Initiative, which I don't think he could untangle. You got to answer for that. There's more emails that have been released today. But instead, Trump continues to do things like fight with a cast of Morning Joe and is now demanding an apology from Mika Brzezinski, who is the co-host of Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough, because Mika Brzezinski said something he didn't like about a Trump ally. He's a child. He's just a child. It's just you can't make it up. Mike Pence and CNN got together this weekend. That was great. Mike Pence said, when it comes to immigration, and DJ, Donnie J, is going to do a speech on Wednesday about immigration. When it comes, remember last week one of Trump's surrogates said he hasn't changed his position, he's only changed his words?
Yeah, it was Kellyanne Conway. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know he has the best words. His speech is coming up on Wednesday. The vice president of the United States, if Trump wins, will be Mike Pence. Here's Mike Pence backing up the boss.
First off, let's be very clear. Nothing has changed about Donald Trump's position on dealing with illegal immigration. He put this issue at the center of this presidential campaign in the Republican primaries. And his position and his principles have been absolutely consistent. We're going to secure the border. We're going to build a wall, have a physical barrier. We're going to enforce the laws of this country, end sanctuary cities, implement E-Verify. And we will have a mechanism for dealing with people in this country that you heard the word humanely again. It's going to be fair. It's going to be tough. But there'll be no path to legalization, no path to citizenship unless people leave the country.
It is such an asinine notion to think that we're that stupid that we don't remember exactly what Trump said. Trump said throughout the debates, the entire time, I'm going to build a wall, and they all got to go. All 11 million of them got to go. He even cited a thing called Operation Wetback, which was a program that the Eisenhower administration did 60 years ago, which is horrific. And he cited that as an inspiration of how he planned to get rid of 11 million plus illegals in this country. Now, think about the actual machinations of his plan. If you had some way to magically pick up 11 million people who have been actively hiding in a lot of cases, living their lives, but not exactly going, hey, by the way, I'm illegal. if you could pick them up and send them out, you pick them up, send them out, and they get in the back of the line and they start over. Who's signing up for that plan?
It's not going to happen.
So Trump absolutely has changed his position because as recently as a week ago, he said, there are some good ones. Hey, good for you, Donnie. There are some good ones. And we have to make sure that we could possibly have some room for a softening. His word, softening. Later in the week, he talked to, I think it was Jake Tapper. Dr. Jake Tapper said, It's not a softening. Some people are calling it a hardening. This is another. It was Anderson Cooper. Some people are calling it a hardening. You know, the only thing hardening is your head.
Hello.
So Trump continues to change, and his surrogates, apparently hypnotized or drugged, actually go out, they look in a camera, and they try to convince you, the American people, that they're not full of crap. It's just astounding.
By the way, speaking of Mike Pence, Pence and Tim Kaine, how exciting will that debate be? The vice presidential debate, that's October 4th.
Well, you know, with the health problems that Trump and Hillary have, they both could drop dead any minute. That could be the presidential debate. Chuck Todd on Meet the Press had David Plouffe on. David Plouffe been in this studio many times representing Uber. David Plouffe was one of the people that got Barack Obama elected. And Plouffe looked me in the eye and said, I'm not going to talk politics. And then I got him to say a couple things. But we got to get Plouffe back on. If the gloves are off and he's going to start talking politics. He did maybe go a little too far here with Chuck.
I mean, basically, we have a psychopath running for president. I mean, he meets the clinical definition, okay?
Wait a minute. Hillary Clinton, Yeah. Do you really think you... Diagnosing people on air, and by, I assume you don't have a degree in psychology. Is that fair? I mean, we're jumping to conclusions here. I think this is what gets voters a little frustrated with
well,
this campaign.
Well, you know, listen, the grandiose notion of self-worth, pathological lying, lack of empathy and remorse. So my point, so here's, I think he does, right? I don't have a degree in psychology.
He's a psychopath. It's 6:30. We'll come back. We'll get your big story next at 720 WGN.
I have edema on my thigh. Pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
Such a sweet song from John DeCosta.
I've got a stomach pain that's low. Fungus on my toe, and I need you now.
Dr. Kevin Mose, courtesy of Northwestern Medicine.
He's from Central DuPage Hospital.
And Northwestern Medicine.
Call Dr. Mose right now.
Impact every day. Doc joins us now. Doc, we probably need to re-record that, and by we, I mean John, to throw in Northwestern Medicine now, huh?
Yeah, how's he going to have to change the lyrics? We got to be careful, because, you know, that's just creeping up that, you know, top 100 list.
Oh, that's a Billboard. Yeah, Billboard would go, what? This is a remake? Yep. Come on.
Yeah.
Thanks for hosting me and three great guys yesterday at the beautiful Butterfield Golf Club. You want to name those fine gentlemen?
Yeah, we did. We had a good time. We had John Lucas out there, Luke. Yep. We had Brian Smith and Jim Gannon. So, you know, three guys that they don't play well, but, boy, we had a lot of fun with them.
Your friend Steve didn't exactly light it up either. So, you know, but it was a beautiful day.
And we had plans, too, Doc, Dave and I. So we'll catch you all the next time.
Yeah, that's why Doc didn't ask. Yeah.
Feel bad about that.
Yeah.
We actually were you in the process of setting that up? We talked about it walking up the 18th fairway.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Dave and Andrea.
We were going to talk about it on the way to the car, but Doc was going in the other direction. At 641, the EpiPen thing is huge, obviously. And there's a story that broke this morning that Mylan will actually release a generic EpiPen to compete with their own EpiPen. You can touch on that in a second, but let's start with the basics here. The EpiPen is a pen that contains the drug epinephrine to stop what type of allergic attacks?
Correct. So people who have really bad allergic responses, something called anaphylaxis, where they stop, or not, I shouldn't say they stop breathing, but their airway starts to collapse down, they swell. So these are the people, many of them have peanut allergies, have lots of allergies can cause it, but it's that bad allergic reaction. And the importance of getting the medication in your system very quickly is what allows us to save lives from really bad allergic reactions.
So this is a very, very important drug to an awful lot of people that are listening this morning.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the estimates, you know, somewhere between 40 and 50 million people in the United States have potentials for anaphylaxis, have potential for this bad allergic reaction. Some of them don't even know it. I mean, if you look at the history, they've used it in schools where, boy, the kid didn't even know he was allergic to anything, and yet he's had this bad allergic reaction, and fortunately the nurse at the school, or actually anybody, the teacher even at the school, can give the medication.
Yeah, for those who don't haven't seen it or don't know how it's used, what happens when the attack occurs? What does the person do?
Yeah, usually they're going to get red, they're going to start to swell, they're going to have hives, and they're going to tell you that they're having a tough time breathing. You know, my tongue is swelling, my airway feels like it's closing. Those are the people that, you know, you really get concerned about, especially the one that says, you know, I'm allergic to peanuts, and boy, unfortunately, they got exposed to it. Or even someone, you know, some of them are allergic to animals. So it's that issue of recognizing it quickly and then making sure that you have the pen. People who know about it will be carrying that pen with them. And a matter of fact, we tell people, we don't want you to carry one pen. We want you to carry two pens. So whether it's keep it in the car with them, keep it in their backpack, keep it in their desk at work, keep it at the desk at school.
What does the epinephrine do once it gets in your system?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We talk about this being a generic, you know, the new one coming out generic, but epinephrine is adrenaline. So it's the exact same thing. And we make adrenaline in our bodies. We have a thing called the adrenal gland. It sits right above our kidney. And what it does, epinephrine allows, everybody has heard of the old fight or flight response. And what epinephrine does when we're put into that situation, adrenaline is released into the body, which allows increased blood flow to muscles, makes us be able to run faster, lift things heavier, and it also increases our blood sugar a little bit, so it gives our muscle energy. And the reason we had that is way back when there were dinosaurs and way back when there were bears chasing us, these are the things, this is the chemical that we needed to make a decision as to whether we're going to run from this thing or fight.
Does it help your body to process more needed epinephrine once that injection happens, or is that not part of this?
No, it's not part of it. It's kind of interesting. You know, you say, well, gosh, if we make this, then why do we need it? Because the body doesn't see the stress of an allergic reaction the same way they see the stress of an emergency. So it doesn't release enough to stop those symptoms from happening, to stop that airway from collapsing. So the importance of getting that additional dose is key. And we use epinephrine for a lot of things. We use epinephrine if someone has a heart attack. We use it when we're taking care of a laceration because it constricts some of the blood vessels to allow more blood to get to the major arteries. So when it constricts those around a laceration, there's less bleeding for us. So we use it in different areas. But the one, you know, obviously we're talking about now is the allergic reaction, mainly in kids.
The only thing I'm aware I'm allergic to is dander, cat dander, that type of thing. But I did have an allergic reaction once to a prescription drug. And fortunately, I had a brief hospital stay at that point, so I was actually, you know, under medical care for a couple of days. So it happened in a hospital. But I can tell you, just in the course of 30 or 40 minutes of dealing with this, from your tongue starting to swell to feeling your throat closing up, as a grown man, I mean, that's panic time.
It is. It's panic time, and you can imagine now if that medication that you need and you know how to use, you can't afford. So that's the biggest concern right now.
It was $57 per injection in 2007, I should say. It is now $600 for a package of two. I guess 57 was probably the package of two back then.
Yeah.
So we're talking about 9 years later, the price has gone up, what, 1,200%?
And, you know, the thing I think that everyone has to realize, we're talking about the drug, when in fact, this is a generic drug already. There is no trade name for this. So actually, when we're talking about the generic, it's actually the auto injector, the piece of equipment that you're using, not the medication. And the thing that really gets everybody up in arms is you're talking about a drug, even in the EpiPen, that amount of drug costs about less than $1. And yet the EpiPen costs $600.
We'll come back more with Dr. Most in a second and also talk more about the cost of this, where it goes. Mylan's news overnight that they're doing a generic and what a generic really means that you touched on there just a second ago. Stand by for all of that at 647. We go back to Mary for a traffic update first as we continue. All of this, Mary, sponsored by the fine people at Northwestern Medicine Impact Every Day. .651 now, talking with Dr. Kevin Most, Northwestern Medicine, Impact Every Day. Everything good at Northwestern Medicine?
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, busy. Been very busy recently. So I don't know whether it's the back-to-school crunch here and people want to get their surgeries done or what's going on, but we've had the last couple of weeks have been very busy.
And do you have purple colors of everything now?
You know, I don't. I don't have any purple on today, actually. So hopefully no one from downtown will come out because since I don't have the team uniform on, I'd be in trouble.
I'm
really good about it.
We're talking about the EpiPen. The EpiPen in 2011 was $165 for a two-pack. In 2012, it was $219. 2013, it was $265. 2014, it was $350. Last year, it was $460. And now it went up to $609 for the two-pack. Mylan, the company that makes it, was originally going to have to cut the price because the FDA was about to approve. Was the FDA or the USDA? FDA. FDA was about to approve a generic drug, and something went wrong with the generic drug maker's product, and they said no, which allowed EpiPen to continue to have a monopoly, which brings us to this.
Well, generic versus non-generic. First of all, how can you create a generic product to compete with yourself, Doc?
Yeah, well, that's the interesting thing. We have to remember that the medication is not generic, even though we're saying generic. Mm-hmm. So the patent is on the auto-injector. And the companies, you know, Teva and Sanofi tried to make their own auto-injectors. And it's so important with this medication that it has to work every time, and it has to deliver the right dose of medication, because we're talking about life and death situations here. So the FDA is going to be very careful about approving one, because they want to make sure that whatever you use as your technology to get that medication delivered is going to work every time. So essentially what Mylan is going to do is they have the trade name EpiPen. They're going to call that something else. Hopefully, and I would imagine they almost have to, use the same technology of their auto-injector so that the right amount of medication is delivered at the right depth at the right time.
So if you get the generic, which isn't really generic, it's the same, I guess, strength as the original medicine, how come all medicine just isn't made generic? Because I would assume more people would want to pay the lesser cost for the medicine.
Oh, absolutely. So let's put this in perspective. A vial of that medication that we buy here at the hospital that we use for... in the emergency room, we'll use it for people having allergic reactions. That costs us about $4.50, and it's a 1 ml. The amount of epinephrine in the EpiPen is a third of that. So it's about a dollar, maybe a little, maybe right around a dollar. So we're starting to see a lot of people say, you know what, I can't afford the $300, the $600, whatever that cost is going to end up being. And they're looking to buy the vials themselves and then buy syringes and make their own injections. That's how desperate some people are.
Which I assume is a very dangerous idea.
Absolutely. You don't know how much you're getting. You don't know how much you're going to take. You don't know how it's going to be delivered. You don't know what the needle length should be. And you're a non-professional. The chance of you injecting air in there is very high. So you got to be very careful.
So this EpiPen generic by Mylan Labs is probably a year away. And when it does come out, it's going to be basically about 50% of the cost. In the meantime, there's no reason to expect that Mylan is going to discount that $609 thing, other than saying there are programs you can apply for. They are not alone in jacking up the price and taking advantage of people with prescription drugs. The prescription drug industry blames the insurance coverage and the insurance companies on this. Who is the what sector do we need to be more mad at here, and what do we need to do?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The two things that you said there that are interesting. One is that, you know, the generic is going to take this as long as it's going to take to get to market. When in fact, if the FDA has approved the auto injector and the medication is already a generic, why can't that come to market faster? Mm-hmm. That's one. I think that this could be a public relations thing with Mylan saying, hey, we're going to do this. It's just going to take us some time. The other thing is the Affordable Care Act did allow for a lot of these people who used to have to pay for it out of pocket. Now at least they have some insurance, which is allowing them to lower their cost. But I have to tell everybody, Mylan is still getting their money. So the cost of this health care, the cost of this medication is still being laid on to all of us because the insurance companies are paying for it. So therefore, premiums are going to go up. So we can't just say, oh, a lot of people get this medicine with no out-of-pocket. Yeah, they do, but a lot of it comes from us as well as the system.
That's kind of ironic, too, don't you think, Doc? Because every time the price goes up of something lately, it's Obamacare. You know, that it kind of takes the blame for a lot of it, whether it's true or not.
Well, yeah, but pharmaceutical companies are smart. They know the price point that people are going to be willing to pay. And when they start to see people get into insurances where a portion of their medications are paid for, that allows them to increase that price because the patient is still going to be paying the same amount, although they're going to end up making more money.
So it all falls back to the same thing. We need to anticipate that Congress will do the right thing and bail us out.
Right.
Oh, that's funny. But people should let their elected representatives know in this election year that you're mad as hell and you're not going to take it anymore. And you're risking people's lives.
Absolutely. You know, and it is. It's people's lives. And I can tell you, they're not paying $600 in other countries. So, I mean, we kind of get it handed to us here in the United States. And
I think screwed is the medical word you were looking for.
Well, but we also allow drugs to be produced and drugs to be researched and new drugs to come to market. It's usually on the back of the United States because we do have that funding. So there's benefits for the world, but it's a lot of it's on our backs.
Next week, we're out of time now, but next week when we do this, I want to talk about backpacks and kids as part of it because, you know, kids are back in school. It seems like these backpacks are getting bigger than ever because kids are taking more homework home than ever. And as a kid's growing up, are they running the risk of hurting themselves? I know. It sounds like I'm being a coddling, I guess be grandfather at this point. But the fact is, it's a legitimate medical question, and Doc will answer that next week.
Yeah, maybe we'll touch on concussions, too. You know, a lot of high school football games started this weekend, so maybe just some awareness on concussions as well.
I may have bumped my head. It's Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine Impact Every Day. Thank you, buddy.
You got it. We'll talk to you soon.
See you later.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Her life was cut short by gunfire from two convicted felons who were both out on parole, one of whom was on his daily break from an electronic monitoring bracelet.
Kids saying they want their mom and their mom won't be in their lives anymore. Only through spirit, only through pictures. That's the only way they know their mom. It's just heartbreaking.
Repeat gun offenders that don't care who they shoot, don't care whose life they take, and clearly don't fear the consequences of their actions. When will enough be enough?
Superintendent Eddie Johnson and Diane Aldridge, mother of Nikea Aldridge, who, by the way, also lost another child to gun violence. It's just beyond words. There's no words you could say to make any of this make sense. And as you know, Superintendent Eddie Johnson said this weekend, hey, you got any magic? Why don't you show it to me? Because I could use the help. A man who knows the job all too well is Gary McCarthy, who is good enough to join us this morning, former superintendent for the Chicago Police Department. Gary, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm fine. You know, I'm appalled. I'm sickened by it, as you are, and you know it from the inside out. What were these two animals doing back on the street?
Yeah, I can't answer that. I can't answer it. You know, the thing that I used to say is the fact that the criminals fear the gang more than they fear the criminal justice system.
Right.
They, you know, there's no reason not to carry a gun in Chicago because nobody goes to jail for it. And if you do go to jail for it, you don't stay in jail. And I'm still waiting for the outrage.
Right.
People are disgusted, but where is the outrage?
Where,
and, you know, this is all self-inflicted.
It's completely self-inflicted. And we do have the power to act. And we go, well, man, I'm glad it's not here. Well, it's coming. Yeah. It's coming, kids. It's coming. There's going to be, we're sitting in one of the most beautiful studios in the world here on Michigan Avenue. And this isn't doomsday Trump nonsense. It's coming. Would it surprise you if somebody got shot outside the studio one morning? It wouldn't me. Because they're a mile and a half away. It's not a different world. That's Chicago.
No, there was a guy who was shot two blocks from a lunch place that you and I go to all the time in the South Loop Sunday.
So I don't know. I don't know, Gary. I don't know what is going to cause the public to just rise up, but it is absolutely ridiculous. So when it comes to these people being on the street, is it crafty lawyering? Is it bad law? Is it a combination of both?
It's bad law. It's bad law. And the illegal possession of a loaded firearm is not considered a violent felony for sentencing purposes. So we started tracking people who we arrest with guns. And there were some people who we arrested 688 people 692 times in the first quarter of 2015. And how can that be? That's because we arrested four people twice. And by April 1st,
by the first day
of the second quarter, 75% of those individuals who we arrested were back on the street, including three out of the four who we arrested twice. If you get arrested twice with a firearm in 90 days, you're a public safety hazard. there's no reason for you to be on the street, but the law in Illinois allows it. We tried to get this changed a couple of years ago. It got blocked by one of the most unholy alliances I've ever heard of, the Black Caucus in Springfield, working with the NRA, tabled a resolution to stiffen gun penalties. I just think about that for a second. What the NRA did was they went to the Black Caucus and said, hey, they want to stiffen gun penalties, and all that's going to do is arrest more young black men. And it got tabled.
They'd rather
they be interned than incarcerated, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. You know, how could the Black Caucus not stop down for a second and go, we're taking advice from the NRA?
Yeah, this was Ken Duncan when he was running the Black Caucus down there. Fortunately, he's gone. Hopefully, somebody else can fix it now.
So,
but, you know, Steve, we still don't hear a plan. We don't hear any leadership.
No, there is no plan. There is no plan. And that's part of the outrage here. But here's the rest of it for me. The potential vice president of the United States is the current governor of Indiana. We keep hearing more and more guns are pouring across the border from Indiana. What's Indiana doing to help?
Yeah, well, Indiana, Wisconsin, and Mississippi are the three places outside of Illinois where most of our guns come from. 60% of our guns still come from right here in Cook County. Places like Chuck's and all these other gun shops that, you know, they go right to the edge, but they do not commit a crime. There's gaps in the law that allows for this to happen. It's terrible.
To make a
store purchase case, which is how those guns make the streets of Chicago. In other words, somebody else goes in, you can actually buy the gun. Many times it's a gangbanger's girlfriend who doesn't have a criminal record, buys the gun, and transfers it illegally. To make that case, it's almost impossible. The hoops that you have to jump through. And that's on the federal level.
Talking with former Chicago Police Superintendent Gary McCarthy. So what does this do to a cop's health, mental health, when you're picking up the same guy three and four times?
It definitely doesn't help morale, I can tell you that, because every time you get that gun off the street, it's an armed confrontation with a criminal. And this is something else that people don't realize, is that police-related shootings in a city where we see 7,000 to 10,000 guns every year, that's 7,000 to 10,000 armed confrontations with criminals that could end up with the police officer getting killed. And we had 19 police-related shootings last year. 19. That's not so bad. And it's also a 70% reduction from 5 years ago. So those officers have remarkable restraint. And what we've done is we've thrown out the baby with the bathwater because of some bad shootings, which have to be addressed. If somebody makes a mistake or a criminal mistake, they have to be held accountable. No two ways about it. But the outrage regarding the police are not the problem in this country right now, and certainly not in the city of Chicago. That's the way that it's being made out.
Want to get your opinion on the videos that are being released. I know there has to be a certain amount of transparency in order to, I guess, rebuild the trust between the public and the police department in many neighborhoods. But what are your thoughts on these videos being released? Do you think that's a good thing, or you think it just kind of creates an incite mentality?
I think it's inciting things, and I think that it's destroying criminal cases. We don't release the evidence in a murder case before the case is finished. In other words, when that prosecution comes to conclusion. Yet now, because of political pressure, we're putting the cart before the horse. How is that building trust? I don't understand. And what's the difference if that tape comes out today, video comes out today, or it comes out 6 months or 8 months from now? It's not building trust. It's not building transparency. That's what everybody's talking about. But the politics of this has it that we're also doing, if you think about it, and I'm not sure I spoke about this last time, but the Inspector General's case that he made on the officers regarding their statements regarding the Laquan McDonald case is completely blowing up the prosecution of Jason Van Dyke. You don't do an administrative case before a criminal case is finished. Or a civil case is finished. No attorney on earth wants that to happen. obviously jeopardizing it, but the politics of it has it that we're doing it. So wait until that happens now. When Van Dyke doesn't get prosecuted because of the administrative case that the city brought against the 7 officers, or the 10 officers, whatever it is, then there's going to be outrage because of that. We're going in circles.
We just live in a I've never thought we could get to this point, but we live in such a cover-your-own-ass time where everybody's concerned about their agenda, their backside, their problem, and it's not on my block, and boy, that's a shame, but I sure wish somebody would do something. You don't need to wait till your kid gets shot. You need to shut this down. You need to shut it down.
And we don't need value statements. We've got that. We know that there's something wrong. We don't need value statements from elected officials or the police. We need a plan, and we need leadership, and that's what's going to turn this thing around. We had a plan. We had leadership. We had this going in the right direction with some bumps in the road. We had 2 straight years of the lowest murder rate since 1965 in this city. Overall crime was down 40% over the 5 years that I was police superintendent. And where are we now? In 8 short months, we've been able to get ourselves back to 1990-type crime rates.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I mean, it ought to trouble every one of you as you go to work and wherever this morning. Gary, I appreciate
every action
you.
Has a reaction. Every action has a reaction. And there's no political solutions for practical problems. And you can't legislate good policing.
Yeah, but legislation would help. Legislation that you're able to stick to and legislation that's enforced.
But Steve, they legislated the police.
No. Well, you know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about legislation that deals with the guns.
Absolutely.
And deals with the criminals. All right. Thank you, Gary. I appreciate it.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
I'll continue to sit. I'm going to continue to stand with the people that are being oppressed. To me, this is something that has to change. And when there's significant change and I feel like that flag represents what it's supposed to represent and this country is representing people the way that it's supposed to, I'll stand.
It's Colin Kaepernick, the 49ers quarterback for now. Here's his statement. I'm not going to stand up to show pride in a flag for a country that oppresses black people and people of color. To me, it's bigger than football. Be selfish on my part to look the other way. There are bodies in the street and people getting paid leave while they get away with murder. Colin Kaepernick has the right to not stand up and take part in the national anthem, which is a tradition. That's it. But having said that, let's just examine this for a second. Colin Kaepernick grew up with white parents in Wisconsin. He was adopted. He got a free college education at the University of Nevada. He was offered scholarships to play baseball at other schools, and he's currently enjoying the fruits of his labor to the tune of an average of $19 million a year. That ain't so oppressed. Now, in addition to that, he has never spoken out about spousal abuse, which has been rampant in the NFL, about girlfriend abuse. You didn't hear a word from him when the Ray Rice case came out. He hasn't talked about DWI. And if we can go with the basic premise that he has a right to do whatever he does when it comes to the anthem, the NFL couldn't be more hypocritical in the fact that if you put a charitable cause on the side of your sneakers, they'll rush to fine you. But that sort of protest and or celebration is held up by the NFL as a violation. Well, the NFL's fear of dealing with this and dealing with Black Lives Matter keeps them from taking any action against Colin Kaepernick. Same goes for the 49ers. So can't we all agree that the flag is here to honor America, to honor the men and women who have died, to protect the freedoms that Colin Kaepernick has to make $19 million a year as an NFL quarterback? Because to me, the national anthem, whether it's before a Blackhawks game or any game, is a chance to take pride in America, to celebrate as a group, but also to have your own personal reflection, whatever it means, about people you know who have served, about why you're glad you're here and not anywhere else, and the blessings that we all have to be an American. I'm going to write about this later, and we'll tell you when the blog is up. But the biggest question for me for Colin Kaepernick is, why now? So what are you going to do? You got all the attention now. You're going to lobby Congress? You're going to go into black neighborhoods? Because I don't see you doing any of those. You're going to go talk to cops and get cops' perspectives? Because when you say something like there are bodies in the streets and people getting paid leave and getting away with murder, I'm afraid you're incorrect, young man. Because the fact of the matter is, every one of those police shootings are investigated. You might not like the outcome, but if you have any belief in the justice system in this country, then you can't just pick the ones you do agree with. So why now? What's the change? What's happened in your life that you would bring it up now at a time when, frankly, nobody's been talking about it lately? Are you trying to get attention for yourself? What happened in your life that has just made you decide that now you're going to speak out? And now what? What are you going to do next? Because if you're really going to be a man about this, you can't just say, well, when the country changes, I'll stand up again. You haven't even defined it because you have no plan. It's simply another meaningless protest. And if somebody took pride in the fact that he made the protest, I guess you won something. But yeah, you have a right to do it. But you also have a right not to be employed by the San Francisco 49ers. Look, playing in the NFL is a privilege. You know what a bigger privilege is? Living in this country. And like everyone else, I am more than happy to stand up and salute this flag with all the problems we have in this country, and we have plenty. You got another place you want to live? Because I sure don't. I have seen soldiers with broken bodies slapping away their relatives' hands as they've risen out of wheelchairs to stand and salute the flag they serve under. The flag they served under overseas while they were shot, nearly killed, blown up, whatever the case may be. And they come back here and they crawl out of a wheelchair to have the privilege to stand up. So am I offended by Colin Kaepernick? Yeah, you bet I am. But I have a right to be offended. He has a right not to stand. But there are repercussions to every action. And the repercussions to Colin Kaepernick's actions ought to be, what now? And what now includes, are you going to be employed by the National Football League? That's it. More on this later, including Jeff Fisher from the St. Louis Rams discussing it as part of HBO's Hard Knocks. I want to get Ennett and Hamp in here to talk about it, too, here in a little bit from a sports perspective. But we got to get to the big story. And we'll take a break and do that next on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
He's the worst quarterback that has played in the NFL the last 5 years.
Period.
Loser. And that's embarrassing. We look like losers.
And they weren't ready. Weren't ready.
He went from all Sean to some Sean to no Sean in about a month here. If you're not going to help us, get out of the damn way.
Period.
It's almost like he's paralyzed by indecision. And folks,
I got a better word for it, Danny. I'm a could it be possible this kid takes scared to death pill.
Can't wait for pregame. Hamp on the Bears and other stuff in just a second. You texters chiming in on Colin Kaepernick. Totally agree with you, Steve. I'm boycotting the NFL over this year. Go college football, go Cats. 708, make a plea to discuss this with Colin Kaepernick on your show. Oh, he's invited. Said his parents must be embarrassed. They may be. Or they may support him fully. Look, you have a right to be offended if you are. You have a right not to be if you're not. That's why you live in this country. 619, his style of protest just drew attention to himself rather than the issue. I agree with that. Steve, thanks for your remarks about how great this country is, even with our problems. My daughter-in-law grew up in Iran. Enough said. And, Steve, you dislike protesters stopping traffic. You dislike people not standing for the national anthem before a game. What methods of protest meet with your personal approval? I would say all the others. Thanks for writing. Texters 312-981-7200 is the telephone number that you can call or text to. Dan Hampton joins us now. Hamp, any thoughts on the Colin Kaepernick thing before we get to the disaster that is the Bears?
How much time we got? Hey, first and foremost, let me just say, I'm all for people being able to make a statement.
Right.
And if you see a wrong, you can try in some feeble way, like this moron is trying to make some type of draw attention to it. I'm all for the 49ers recognizing the fact that this guy is a joke as a quarterback, and they don't feel it's important for them to be able to pay him the $11.3 million salary this year when he can't even get off the bench. So I'm all for people being able to make a statement for whatever they believe in.
Yeah, we live in this country, so you can have the rights to do it. But I'd like to see Colin Kaepernick go into the tough neighborhoods and talk to kids about making better choices. I'd like to see him go talk to cops about the decisions they have to make. And I'd like to see him try to make it better as opposed to just making some stand that, frankly, doesn't matter until he does something else.
You know, look, we could talk about this forever. And there's going to be a lot more come out about the story about certain things involving his girlfriend, one thing or another. But yeah, like I said, come on. You know, the NFL is about, you know, it's something to deviate our interest for a little while and try to get some enjoyment. And now we've got a guy that can't even get off the bench trying to make himself the story. And if I was on that team, I think it's exactly what you just said. Hey, you want to make a difference? Come on. After practice, I'll drop you off down in the bad part of town, and you can make some points with the occupants there about inequality and all these other things. But hey, you're on a football team. You're paid to be a part of the team. We're going to do this together as a team. And you're not going to make that distinction about, oh, I've got different beliefs, I'm going to do something different here. So,
we haven't even talked about the sports part of this too, because now everybody in the locker room gets to answer Colin Kaepernick questions, and they're a week before opening day. All right, let's do traffic. Let's clear our palates, and let's come back and assess the enjoyment that is the Chicago Bears in just a second. But first, at 7:47, Mary, what do you say? Good morning to Mike Hillstrom and our friends at Select Marketing. Oh, and by the way, every time Hamp's on this show, it's sponsored by ChevyDriveChicago.com and your local Chevy dealer. Go see him.
An animal!
Dan Hamp anchors a young Bears defense.
An animal!
It's time for Dan Hampton.
Dan Hampton rejoins us now. I'm telling you, Hamp, I tried. I mean, I'm fully willing to skip the entire preseason. But this game three, this is the one that was supposed to matter. I tried. They were awful.
Well, if you tried, you're one of the few that did. And, you know, I made the point after the game. I said, you know, I understand. It's if you're a pretty good football team and maybe you made the playoffs or you're 11-5 and you don't really feel like you got a lot to prove, not only to your fans, but the rest of the league, first and foremost, let's do it for some self-respect. You know, we all have to pride and a little dignity in what we're trying to do here. And man, it takes, you know, I mean, Kansas City bats us around after the Denver Broncos embarrass us at home. I feel bad for the fan base. And, you know, they get the old song and dance from the head coach about, oh, yeah, well, we know it's a preseason game. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter. Well, at some point, it's going to matter, and we got to see it. And the most important part of this equation is, hey, a team is a team, and you just can't – it's not the NBA. Or you get a – you know, you sign a pitcher – and you bring him in, and the catcher tells him what the signs are, and you got to work together. You got to do, and all those things should come to fruition through the preseason. And we have seen virtually nothing good happen for this team. And you know, with Kyle Long out, Kyle Fuller being out, there's only two players on this roster from the last game of Mark Trestman to the projected starters in the opener, and that would be Cutler and Alshon, and everybody else is a new face. So I think it's time we go, hey, this is who we are. This is what we think we can be. Let's go out, prove it to the to the Chiefs, but let's prove it to our fans. There is a reason to believe, hey, we're going to be better. We're going to be improved. It's almost like they don't want to they're going to reinvent the wheel. They're going to do it all in secret, and then unveil it in Houston in, 13 days. I hope they can, but I've been around this game a long time. I've never seen it happen.
Hamp, I know nobody plays in these fourth preseason games. Is this the time you make an exception when a team has looked this bad in the preseason where you say, sorry, guys, you don't get this game off?
You know what, Mr. Cat? I almost would, if the coaches came to me and said, oh, yeah, well, guess what? We told you last week didn't matter, but now everybody's making a big fuss about it because really it does matter. So we're going to have you play. So, I mean, now you got everybody's head spinning. I just think sooner or later, you know, there has to be accountability. And 6-10 isn't good enough. And, yeah, there, we understand. There's only two guys left from, you know, basically a year and a half ago. Well, changing faces doesn't, you know, feed the bulldog. We got to see improvement, and we haven't seen it. It took a third-string quarterback and your third-string receiver to score with 4 minutes left in the game. Otherwise, you would have been shut out at home in back-to-back preseason games. And the last time the Bears were ever shut out in a preseason game at home was 35 years ago, and it almost happened twice. So is there a reason to say, well, I need to see more. I think we're going to play some start. I don't know. I don't know what you do there because, you know, back in my time, the hay is supposed to be in the barn. I know. And, you know, we went in there and we were looking for it. It wasn't there last week. I don't know if they can find it on a Thursday night, you know, 8 days before the season opener.
How much of this is coaching versus the personnel? In other words, I can have –
it's
the
all
best,
coaching.
Best
it's
coaches
all,
in the world, but if the talent's not there, nothing happens, does it?
Well, but see, that's the point. If you're changing the personnel, then you need to coach. Now, if you've got seven all pros on offense, five on defense, and they play bad, well, that's on them because you know what to expect. They have proven a certain level of, you know, performance that they need to adhere to. These are young kids. These are new players. These are guys that you are telling us are good enough to compete and win in the NFL, and yet there's nothing to show for it. That's all on the coaches. And maybe not so much – okay, let's talk about the receivers. You know, Kevin White, I think there was one time in the game that they actually ran him down the field more than 10 yards. All we hear about is, oh, we drafted this kid so high because he's fast. Well, let him run routes that maybe prove that he is fast. What about Alshon? He's our franchise player. Yeah, he was kind of going half speed and dropped a couple of passes. Our quarterback, franchise quarterback, made some bad throws. He was starting to get beat around. I mean, all these, you know, all these different things, you know, there has to be a certain motivation, whether it comes from a fear or a commitment to excellence, or all those things. You know, back in our day, if I played poorly, I would look bad to Dent and McMichael and Otis. And, you know, I did not want to let them down. I didn't want to disappoint them. And, yeah, sure, the byproduct was everybody is pushing each other and we've become, you know, really, really good, great. Well, I don't see any of that. I see a bunch of guys going through the motions, making mistakes, playing like it's, you know, the third day of practice down in Bourbonnais. When are they, how are they going to know when it's time to hit the switch? And, you know, Dicky used to say it, you can't hit the switch. It's like this entire coaching staff is under some kind of hypnosis that thinks, oh, well, we'll just keep putting these plays in. We're not going to show them anything. And then on September 11th, boom, the lights come on, and we play like the second coming of the greatest show on turf. I don't know how you can expect that, but to me, it seems like that's what they're thinking, and it's not a good plan.
Any defensive line good news anywhere?
Yeah, there's a lot of good news on the defensive front. I like a lot of those kids, and you know, I Ryan Pace is making some decisions, you know, now here at the cutdown, but That kid, Jonathan Bullock, he can play. Eddie Goldman is better. The outside guys. I'll tell you, Willie Young and Lamar Houston. I know Lamar. And let me just say that. Lamar Houston made a missed tackle on a screen pass that basically allowed Kansas City to go 30, 40 yards there on the back, and they get in position to get a touchdown, the first touchdown, after we had played pretty good defense. Now, okay, that's on him. He's supposed to be better than that. And he dadgum should better be better than that. But I'll just tell you this. In practice, there's a certain kind of going through the motion speed, And then there's a speed where you know it's do or die, you make the damn play. You can't miss that tackle. To me, it looked like everybody on the field, due to the fact that the head coach told them it really doesn't matter, they were going through the motion speed. And, you know, I just, like I said, yeah, the front seven I'm worried about. Corners, both our starters are out. That's trouble. Both of the young safeties, they're making strides. There's a lot of good stuff. The inside linebackers, Danny Trevathan, he's awesome. And, you know, we've had some great middle linebackers here, but this kid, he fits in with that group. But the bottom line is, your defense, even though, you know, they should be able to crank it up and do some pretty good stuff, it's a mystery to me how this offense thinks that, you know, they're going to all of a sudden, you know, they're going to, you know, get a vapor and everything's going to come together. I haven't seen it, and I'm sure we probably won't see it Thursday night. I'm just, you know, hoping against hope that they realize they got to find a way to get it together for the opener.
Thursday night is the Browns. That's the final preseason game. Maybe Brian Hoyer back in Cleveland.
Do you want me to send over coffee to keep you up? I know it's going to be tired. You know, and I feel, hey, I was there on the stadium, and they brought that Cook in, the young quarterback, and he had a broken leg, and then we hear that, you know, Cutler got batted around pretty good, and then Hoyer took some shots. So if I was, David Fells, the fourth team quarterback, I'm trying to find a way to pull a muscle this week in practice, because who wants to go out there and after you see the three guys in front of you, you know, standing in line in the training room?
Yeah, no, it's not good. It's not good. It's not, yeah, you know, it's not good. It's not. Hey, Hawks soon. Hold on. Yeah, thanks, buddy. That's Dan Hampton, brought to you by Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy Dealers.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood, you know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood, well, kiss me good.
Later, so you want to buy a drone? Talk about drones later this hour. Dean Richards joins us. Dean, you should buy a drone. Drones are fun.
I thought you said throne for a minute, and as it turns out, I am looking for a throne. So, yeah, drone would be nice, too.
I want to talk about Clint Eastwood, the VMAs, Charles Osgood, weekend box office, but let's talk about what really matters. Anthony Weiner needs to be put in jail to protect him from himself.
Why can't he stop? Why can't he stop?
Nobody wants to see pictures of the little wiener. Nobody. 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 Anthony Weiner, after losing his congressional career, after dropping out of the New York mayor's race, and after barely hanging on to his marriage and his family, is sexting again. You can't make it up.
It's obviously some kind of addiction that he's got. I mean, it's weird.
Who's addicted to their own Johnson? Get outside. Go to a show. Do something with your life.
He's apparently got some kind of bizarre, weird sexual addiction. Something, because wasn't one of the new sexting pictures while he was laying in bed with his son? He was taking a nap with his son and decided to take one of those pictures with his son right next to him.
Yep, curled up next to him. And not a sweet little father-son photo. No, it's a picture of the child that should be taken away from him as he's sending a picture of him and his tidy whities to somebody online. And again, this guy was reputed to be one of the smarter guys in Congress. That probably tells you all you need to know about Congress. The fact that he continues to text with strangers in hopes of having some sort of sexting hookup and is always amazed when it goes public. What a genius.
Yeah, this is, I don't get the whole sexting thing in the first place. But
women don't want to see it. I've said this a million times. Women don't want those pictures. Knock it off. Women don't want to see it. Why do you think women turn the lights off?
One of many reasons, but go ahead.
It's not about concern about how they look. What's that?
There's really nothing pretty about the whole thing.
No. So that's it. Anthony Weiner news. We're finished with Anthony Weiner news for the moment.
But enjoy your breakfast, everyone.
And by the way, really, really helpful to his wife in so many other ways, too, when she's in the middle of the Clinton Foundation mess and is probably going to be investigated thoroughly herself. She comes home after a hard day at work, and Anthony Weiner is trying to figure out what to do with his life. What'd you do with your day? Oh, I was sexting bimbos. Yeah, it was great. Want to see the pictures?
Yeah, here. See, look how cute Junior looks right next to me while I was doing it.
What a freak show. It's 8:17. All right, we'll start with Clint Eastwood when we come back on 720 WGN. More with Dean next.
You'll be calling his name. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 972.
8:21. Dean's still on his West Coast tour. I assume that's where you are.
I am in Los Angeles, returning to Chicago today. In a hotel room. I just texted you some pictures of my.
Oh, these are cute with the cleaning lady curled up next to you. That's nice.
Yeah,
that's
nice. I don't know if I don't get all this whole sexting thing. Maybe I don't understand it. I sent you a picture of the mini bar.
Yeah. It's hot.
I sent you a picture of the free toiletries. Isn't that what you do with
sexting? That is. That's exactly it. Yeah.
I wanted to show my amenities. Yeah, I wanted to show my amenities, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, same with Wiener. Hey, so you talked to Captain Sully Sullenberger yesterday. I'd be curious to see shortly after he landed the plane in the Hudson and saved all those folks, I had him on the air a couple of times. And he was not an easy conversation. Now, granted, he might have been a little guarded then because, you know, they were investigating him and wondering why he put the plane in the water and could he have made it to the airport and on and on and on. How was his disposition now?
Couldn't have been nicer.
Okay.
Couldn't have been more professional, more cordial, really very, very nice. This movie really is about all of that you just mentioned that a lot of people don't know about. They know the headline of the emergency landing in the middle of the Hudson River and that the whole world called him a hero. But the National Transportation Safety Board launched a very detailed investigation against him. And that's really what this movie focuses on, directed by Clint Eastwood, starring Tom Hanks. We're supposed to do a couple of the interviews. Tom Hanks isn't doing a lot of interviews for this movie, so unfortunately we weren't scheduled to talk with him.
Why is that? I'm just curious.
I don't know. I think he wants the movie to speak for itself. Honestly, I mean, I joke about that a lot, but he's done maybe about 10 interviews total. He's not, doing a lot of them. I talked with him. I saw him in the hallway and talked with him a little bit in the hallway yesterday. And he just said that he wants the movie to kind of stand on its own and not be distracted by a lot of press, which is, an interesting take on it. The movie is phenomenal, by the way. And Steve, that's not a review. As you know, I would never review anything.
Not early. Before, nope. You don't do that.
Before a movie opens on September the 9th, I would never talk about how amazing Tom Hanks is in this. And Clint Eastwood's direction in this movie is nothing short of stunning. I mean, it's an absolutely beautiful movie. I can't wait for everybody to see it and talk more about it when it opens. But I had the chance to sit with Sully yesterday, and it's pretty amazing when you sit next to somebody who did what he did. This guy is a genuine American hero.
Did it remind you a lot of what you do every day?
Yes, it did. It did put my job into perspective. But I talked to, showbiz wannabes most of my day, and this guy saved 155 lives. Split second decision, saving people's lives. And I'm talking to bozo actors for what I do for a living. I also wasn't scheduled to talk to Clint Eastwood. He's done virtually no press on this film, at all, but I was talking with him in the hallway, and he loved Chicago and said, hey, come on, let's set it, you know, let's talk. So had a great interview with him yesterday. We'll be sharing both of those. When I get back to Chicago, I'll play you know, some portions of the interview for you. Told a great story about hanging out when he directed his first movie, Play Misty for Me, that Roger Ebert was one of the very few critics who liked it, and came to Chicago to give an interview to Roger Ebert because he was, you know, giving him positive press on the movie, and talked about going out and getting drunk with Roger Ebert.
Oh,
in
that's
Chicago.
Hilarious.
Yeah, it's a great story.
But
very cool. Interestingly, I'm taking some heat for on Facebook for interviewing, you know, I took a picture with Clint Eastwood, put it on my Facebook page, and some people going crazy because he's, you know, super Republican, super conservative, and, you know, some people disagree with him politically and, you know, saying, how dare you take a picture with somebody who's conservative. It's like, some of my friends are conservative. What can I say? You know, I mean, I'm not friends with Clint Eastwood, but I don't, you know, hate somebody's work because of the political views that he has. We have different political views on lots of things, but I respect him greatly. He's one of the greatest actors and filmmakers of all time.
Yeah, it's idiotic to think that because you might differ with somebody politically, you couldn't possibly talk to them in the course of your job. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But then again, you and I are right. Just ask me.
I texted him some pictures, too.
He loves the minibar pictures.
He enjoys the good minibar.
The VMA Awards were last night. What are they doing at MTV now? They're not playing music videos, but they're making movies?
They are making movies. They have a branch that does make movies. They have a branch that, you know, they do these reality shows that they do. That's going on. They show virtually no videos. It's pop culture centric, you know, and it's music centric, but the days of, you know, showing, you know, Supertramp and, Video Killed the Radio Star videos, those days are gone, but they still do this, you know, the VMA Awards are one of the more popular award shows of the year. And Beyonce was the big winner last night. She won 8 awards. She now has more VMA awards than the previously top award winner for the VMAs, Madonna. But she won, among the awards that she won last night was Video of the Year. She won Best Female Video of the Year for her song Hold Up. Calvin Harris with Rihanna won Best Male Video. Best Collaboration went to Fifth Harmony with Ty Dolla $ign, Steve. And their song "Work Home."
Yeah, I know that song. Yeah, I usually have that song playing when I look at the pictures you sent me.
It's your ringtone. Yeah,
yeah.
Drake's Hotline Bling was the best hip hop video of the year. Kanye West went on stage last night. I didn't see the awards because I was busy here, but I was reading about how Kanye West went crazy on stage, went on stage and gave another crazy speech that, you know, might be worth Googling if you're into crazy stuff on the internet. And what I found of the coverage most interesting, Beyonce and Jay-Z brought their little daughter, Blue Ivy, with them to the award show, because that seems like a really appropriate event to take.
Totally. It's a family event. It's always been a family event, the VMAs.
It's like going to Disneyland. It's like taking the kids to Disneyland.
Take the kid to the park, get them ice cream, take them to the VMAs. Take them to the VMAs. That's your choice.
So number one, that took place. They're the parents, I guess, their choice to make. But on the red carpet, it was learned that little Blue Ivy was wearing an $11,000 dress.
Yep. And why wouldn't she be? She's, what, 4 or 5 now? Or 2?
Yeah.
What is she, 2, 5, 10?
I think she's 5 years old.
5 years old. It's a beautiful thing. Who is this Mexican singer that passed away?
This was one of the most popular singers in Hispanic music. His name is Juan Gabriel, and he passed away suddenly here in the Los Angeles area. People who know His music, he was a Person of the Year, the Latin Grammy Awards. He was one of the top singer-songwriters, top-selling artists in Mexico. Pretty really huge big deal in Mexican music. And only 66 years old, died suddenly. They don't know the cause of death yet. But, you know, people into that genre of music are, you know, are really stunned at the sudden news.
Charles Osgood is retiring. He's been doing the morning thing how long?
He has been doing that for like, 22 years. He's been doing CBS Sunday Morning. But he's been a fixture at CBS News for over 50 years and has decided that he's going to slow down a little bit and take it easy. And has said publicly he encourages people to listen to my Sunday morning radio show.
Yeah.
Instead of watching CBS on Sunday morning. You know, really, really, he's been a thorn in my shoe for, you know, like 20 years. So, you know, good riddance, honestly.
Yeah. Good spirit by you. And the weekend box office, who is your big winner?
The big winner was the Scary Movie. A really big surprise, Don't Breathe. That stars Stephen Lang. That's the one that everyone went to. It made over $26 million. Nobody expected this film to do well at all. So a huge surprise. Suicide Squad drops to number two. And have you seen Sausage Party yet?
No, I have not. I've been to a couple, but I haven't seen it.
That's so instead of it, Anthony Weiner has been too. Mm-hmm. That movie drops to the number four spot on the box office for the weekend.
Have a good trip back. Say hi to your friend Clint Eastwood. I can't believe you're spending time with him. I was just as shocked as the internet.
Steve, I'll talk to you tomorrow. I was just distracted. I was taking another picture.
Click.
Heavy breathing.
Dean's doing this thing where he stands in the bathroom and he takes a picture in the mirror, but it's just a picture of Dean in the mirror. There's really nothing going on.
There's some really nice toiletries in this room. Don't knock it.
Ah, the kids and their pictures.
The bad bathroom selfies.
Ah, it's fantastic. Wintrust Community Bank's Hour continues with the big story next. I suppose real estate is a big deal for drones, right?
I would think so.
Because you're buying a house and you get a view from above of the lot and the house, and you open the front door and the back door, you can probably fly the drone right through the house.
Yeah, but you're supposed to stay a certain distance from it too.
The drone or the person running it?
The person from the house and the people you're spying on.
Brian Baldoff is with VHT Studios. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Hi, Steve. I'm great.
Nice to have you on. What is VHT Studios?
We're VHT Studios is the largest real estate, photography, video, and marketing company in the country.
All right. So what does the government want from you before you can start flying a drone? Is it a big, heavy process?
Well, until recently it was. If you were going to fly a drone for commercial purposes, for business, you actually had to have a pilot's license and you had to have a waiver from the FAA. As of this week, those rules change, and now you basically just have to take a test online, and you can become certified to fly drones for business purposes.
Is that a good idea, or do we need a little more regulation?
Well, I think it's a good idea. It's definitely going to open up the market, and there's a lot of demand for drone photography and video. But I think after that, we'll start to see more regulations at the state and the city level as things happen. Like you talked about flying over crowds of people, a lot of cities like the city of Chicago don't allow that.
All right, so you should have let's say you're doing this for a business, and real estate is the easiest one that comes to mind, and that's your business. You've got a list that people can access that are things you ought to be thinking about. You start with know your strategy, meaning what? Have a marketing plan for the pictures you're going to use?
Yeah, definitely. You know, drone photography and video really helps when there's something near the property. You know, the setting of the property is part of the story. So you mentioned golf courses. We, VHT, photographs a lot of homes that back up to golf courses. That's something that really sells the home when you can see that dramatic shot from the sky and kind of fly around and check out what tee or green is behind the home. Same thing with lakes and rivers and streams and parks. And
can you pick up me cursing if I snap hook one out of bounds?
We probably could. I think a great app would be if golf courses would allow, you know, would photograph all of their fairways. When you get to the tee, you could just play the video and see how that hole plays out.
I think courses will get to that, but The sooner the better. How much does that course cost that you have to take from the FAA, the online course?
It's about $300.
A lot of studying involved?
I haven't taken the test myself. There's definitely some studying involved. A lot of it's about rules and regulations. And then, you know, of course, you actually have to know how to fly the drone, too. You have to learn how to fly it.
And don't fly your friends into a building.
Right. Or fly your drone into your friend's building.
So. Yeah, either one are bad. There are certain rules. The FAA says stay how far from a control tower?
We have to stay about 5 miles away.
How do I know how far 5 miles is?
Well, there's actually apps. You can log in. The FAA has an app, and if you're going to fly somewhere, you can see if you're in a flight path or near a control tower. So for commercial purposes, there's definitely considerations. You have to have in mind hobbies. It's easy. But.
And amongst the other rules, this seems logical, you got to stay within the drone's line of sight. You got to be able to see your drone. It
right.
seems logical, but I guess some people get cocky and go, I can fly it, and I'll get it back.
Yeah, it's an easy rule to break because usually you can see the video on your iPad or your tablet as you're flying the drone. So you can fly it away and still see where the drone's going and what it's seeing. So, but yeah, the rules are you've got to keep it within line of sight.
Brian, how much is a drone, I guess your average drone, and do you have to have insurance for it too in case it does crash?
Sure, those are good questions. For a hobbyist, to get a drone, it's a couple $100. A lot of fun taking it out to the park. For a professional drone, if you're going to use it for business, they're probably more like $2,000 to $3,000. And in real estate, like at VHT Studios, you definitely want to have insurance because you run into things like, you know, weather. A big gust of wind could blow your drone into somebody's window or something. And it's definitely not for novices.
So you get your drone, you drop $2,000, you're ready to market your business, you take your drone up once, you don't really know what you're doing, you crash your drone, does the insurance cover it?
Well, it depends on what you crashed it into and what your policy is. Hopefully, it covers it. We would definitely recommend, a lot of training, like the photographers at VHT have all been doing this for a long time. Most of our drone pilots today actually are pilots. That's why we were able to start offering these services last year. But, it takes practice. Again, like golf, probably anybody can do it, but to do it well.
Is there cursing in drone flying as well?
There is. I've seen some cursing, heard some cursing. Luckily, we can edit that out of the videos. But
Brian, are there privacy restrictions for drones, too? Like they can't get too close to a residential building or even if you are going to be swearing on the golf course? Not that that happens ever with you, Steve.
No.
Yes, there are, and I think that's the area that you'll start to see more restrictions. One thing with commercial drones, they're never going to sneak up on you. They're pretty loud, but you're not allowed to fly over groups of people. You know, there's always restrictions at schools. You can't fly over where there's kids present, and some common sense privacy. Like in the real estate photography business, our pilots will typically, or our clients will typically tell the neighbors, hey, we're going to be doing drone photography here this morning, just so you know. And if there's any concerns, you get those out of the way up front.
And obviously, you got to have some video editing software. What do you recommend?
There's tons of video editing software out there. That's one of the tricks here. I think a lot of people learn how to fly a drone and then they're just amazed with the video. But you actually have to be a good videographer and photographer if you're trying to market real estate or market a business. There's some art and creativity and talent to it. So the tools are all out there, the Photoshops and, you know, Adobe editors and things like that. But again, another part of it that takes a lot of practice to do it well.
And it's an important part of it as well. If people want to see the whole list, where do they go?
You can go to vhtstudios.com. We've got tons of samples there, and we provide coverage all over the country. And if they have any questions, they can always call us, too.
What's the number?
It's 1-800-790-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
And we can come to yours, your establishment, and just fly your drone until we get it right. If we crash it a couple times, no big deal.
For you and Andrea, sure. Come on over.
Nice, Brian.
It's really nice of you. Thank you, my friend. All the best.
All right. Love to golf with you someday.
Great. We'll curse together.
It's, thanks, Brian. That is cool, though. I think you see those drones everywhere now.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. Well, I think it's cool.
I think it's cool, too.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I mean, you got to, you know, you keep in mind free will is what it is. If you're going to have any knucklehead fly it, you're going to have some issues.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't want them outside my window either.
But this is where I become hypocritical. I want some government involvement, but only in what works for me. It's like, at least I'm willing to admit it. It's a couple minutes before 9 on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Social media is big nowadays.
Nine 11. All the kids love the social media. Pam Rogerman, dean for the College of Education at the University of Phoenix, says, look, this is not a priority for teachers, or maybe not as big a priority as it ought to be, to integrate social media into the classroom. Is that part and parcel of the fact that class sizes are too big and teachers are being asked to do more than they've ever done? Or is it just an institutional issue? Well, let's ask Pam. Is it Rogerman, Pam? Did I get that right?
Yes, it is Rogerman. Good morning. Yes, that's right.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you? And I was listening to you just do the little summary, and you kind of hit the nail on the head. And you know what? I think it's like anything. I think there's a learning curve that goes along with embracing anything that's new. And, you know, with technology, I think that what we've seen is we've seen a lot of gains. I know specifically for my own kid, one of the biggest gains that I've noticed is her backpack weighs a lot less. And
right.
That's because school districts have figured out that it's cheaper to buy online textbooks than it is to buy the hardback textbooks that they need to update every 7 to 8 years. And so,
sure.
You know, there's things like that where technology, I think, has really come a long way. And I think that teachers are kind of jumping on the bandwagon and using technology as a tool, as a resource. And they've also been using, you know, technology to help kids with process for quite a while. And by that I mean that, you know, they're using different kinds of search engines and kids are becoming a little bit more self-sufficient learners at home. But like you said, the University of Phoenix recently did a survey of over 1,000 K-12 teachers. And what that survey showed is that teachers are still a little bit reluctant to jump on the social media bandwagon. And there's you know, a lot of reasons why that is so.
Well, but I think about young teachers who I'm sure, and by young I would guess I mean, what, 35 and under, 40 and under, immersed in social media themselves, and they spend a bunch of personal time on it. Is it because the image of kids wasting their day on social media and taking pictures of their food and their left foot and all the other things that seem to be counterintuitive to teaching kids, is that where the block comes from?
Well, you know, while it is fascinating to know every minute that they buy a pop at the store.
Totally.
I think really... Right. Like, we need to know every thought that comes in your head. But I think it's, what our survey has shown is that 4 in 5 teachers say they're worried about conflicts that can occur from social media use with students and parents. And again, I don't say that for everybody. I mean, I know principals out there, you know, I get push notifications, from my principal at my kid's school about, you know, days off and what's coming up. And I get, you know, weekly notifications, from, my kids' teachers about what they've done this week and what they should be doing this weekend. And so I think some teachers are okay using social media as a communication tool if it's a push. And that, by that I mean, like, if they are pushing out information to families at home. But where I think that it becomes a little bit intimidating is where it becomes interactive. And so you know, some of the things that are intimidating about that are, how do you create boundaries, not only for the student but also for the teacher? Because, you know, teachers are allowed to have a private life. They don't need to know if they go to buy, you know, the whole class doesn't need to know if they go to buy a bottle of wine at the Circle K.
That's right.
Not that any teachers do that, and not that any teachers
No,
need that.
Teachers don't drink.
No, no. They didn't invent happy hour. They just perfected it. I like to think that. But but really, I think that the two-way communication, you know, teachers do need to be able to shut down that two-way communication sometimes. So I think that what the savvy teachers have figured out is how to create those boundaries and how to create that space where students can drop in when they need help and teachers can visit that space appropriately. And so where that comes in are teachers who have created their own wiki spaces and their own blogs and their own pages where students can, you know, maybe have chats or if they're having trouble with their homework or in the evening when they're doing projects, then they can bop in and not only get help from the teacher, but also get help from their fellow students. But, you know, that takes time. And like anything, in order to be able to do it and to do it well, not to just give it lip service and say, oh, yeah, I'm using social media in my classroom, that takes real training. And that takes time to develop the use of it and to get comfort with it. And then to also to use it purposefully and not just as another way to do the same old things. Like I remember way back when, you know, 10 years ago when teachers first started using PowerPoint. And, you know, really all that became is just kind of like a newfangled overhead projector. And so, you know, it's when teachers started to realize that they needed to make their classes more engaging by, you know, creating links to the PowerPoint or flipping their classrooms and using the PowerPoint to have the general, you know, kind of the direct instruction happening at home. So when students came to the classroom, then all of a sudden they could ask questions and engage in discussions and, you know, just take that learning one step beyond. Because I think that's really, really the goal of any kind of instructional tool is to make the class more fun, to make it more engaging. Just like, you know, at night when we hear about something new or we want to learn something, you know, we go to YouTube. I mean, I know that I myself have my favorite YouTube channels that, you know, are about topics that I'm interested in, and I have my favorite YouTube personalities. And our kids do too. And so, you know, what I think is really great is when you can find an educator who's got, a, you know, a content YouTube channel that is fun and it's interesting, and it really takes the classroom, you know, breaks down the walls of the classroom and just continues to expand it. So I think that social media is becoming a new instructional tool for our teachers, and it's adding to the curriculum, but really it's how to make it engaging, just like anything else. You could buy the best curriculum tool on the planet, but until the teacher makes it relevant, until the teacher draws the student into it, and until the teacher gets that magical point where they have to like tell the kids, put down that whatever you're doing and learning about because we need to do something else.
How do you limit it, Pam, though? I mean, will libraries become obsolete? Because remember when we used to have to say, go do a report, you'd have to go to the library, get a ride, or walk over and look everything up in a book. And I know times have changed because we can look everything up on our phone. But how do you limit that?
You know, I don't think that you necessarily do. I know that libraries today on most campuses are called resource centers. They're not called libraries anymore. And you do see books there. There are actual books, but also there's all kinds of computers because, you know, resources are more than hard books sitting on a shelf. But lest you worry that kids aren't reading anymore, if you take a look at what kids are doing online, most of the time what they're doing is they're reading. And so what it really does, I think, is I think technology can be the great equalizer. I think it can give kids from every social economic background access. And I think that's a really good thing. And, you know, kids with, or students with disabilities in any way, learning or otherwise, I think what technology has done is it's taken off that filter that used to be a barrier for all students. So, no, libraries will always exist because, you know, what you're always going to have at the library or the resource center is the more knowledgeable other that's going to introduce you to a whole new world.
Is there a way that the negatives of social media can become positives by using it appropriately in the classroom? For instance, the bullying problem. You know, we're back in school now and parents are worried about bullying. Most bullying, not most, but I would say the majority of bullying occurs on social media. If we figure out a way to maximize it, can we use it as an advantage?
Well, and I think that, you know, for our teacher candidates now, social media is a large part of their classroom management plan. You know, just as you create your classroom rules, you create, you know, the rules that extend to the classroom beyond the four walls. And And I think, you know, with all of those, you know, all of the tools, Snapchat, Twitter, you know, Instagram, all that, I think that you have to be absolutely aware of where it can take you down the negative rabbit hole and plan ahead and proactively, just like, you know, back in the day you had to, you know, incorporate cell phone usage into your classroom management plan, because, you know, nowadays you can bet that most students are bringing their cell phone. And so what do? You ban it completely and make it be this thing that students want to go to? No, of course you don't. You use it as a tool. You tell the students, you know, this is when it's appropriate for you to take out your cell phone and for you to use it as a resource. And that's the same exact thing that you need to do for social media. And that's what teachers do. And that's why I think that some teachers, you know, smartly choose to not engage until they are completely aware, because, you know, rule number one as a teacher is keep the kids safe. And so the last thing you want to do is introduce them to something in a way that you're not appropriately prepared, that doesn't keep our kids safe. So so it's part of the classroom management plan. And again, what that requires for teachers is to be educated on that. And while I think teachers are probably the best population of professionals out there who educate themselves and who are ongoing learners, you know, it's something new. And so what you do is, you know, you learn from people who are have, you know, kind of blazed that trail ahead of you, and you figure out, you know, what are the pitfalls that people have confronted, and what are the things that we can do to avoid them. But and so you put certain filters on there, you block certain images. I mean, you know, school districts have been doing this again for over a decade.
Sure.
they've been working to keep kids safe, and, you know, and letting parents be completely aware of what their kids are doing at school. I mean, every year I still sign a paper that allows my child to go online at school. School districts don't just assume that all parents want their kids to be online.
Yeah, and some parents don't, and some parents over-manage it, and some parents under-manage it. Look, we ask teachers to do a ridiculous amount of work that has very little to do with the classroom, along with most committed teachers who worry about their kids the majority of the time that they're not at work as well. But that's part of the passion and love of doing what you do, and we appreciate it every day. My daughter's a teacher. I know how much she takes her work home, and everybody that is a teacher, I think, does. And I guess maybe when you don't do that, maybe it's time to get out. But we love what you do. We're happy for the advice. And I think, like anything else, there's a learning curve here. Look, we'll get there.
You start small. Start with creating your own classroom Facebook page and posting other resources on there and allowing kids to comment. You know, that's easy to monitor. And I think that, you know, almost every generation, you know, you're going to find you're going to find octogenarians on Facebook. So, you know, right. It's an easy place.
Not just octogenarians, older people. great talking to you. I love your energy. Hold the line. Again, that is a lot on Facebook, and a lot on whether or not you ought to have Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and everything else in the classroom. Look, it ain't going away, kids. It ain't going away. And like everything else, it's going to be integrated into classrooms eventually. But you got to do it smartly. Pam Roggeman, Dean for College of Education at the University of Phoenix. 922. You know, we come back. Adam Hogeband a little while. We come back. What do you think Jeff Fisher, coach of the LA Rams, said about the national anthem? Want to hear that? Play that in a second on 720 WGN. God, this show's not live. Jeff Fisher's a coach of the LA Rams. The LA Rams are the team featured in Hard Knocks this season. And I go back to Rex Ryan when he coached the Jets as their greatest season on Hard Knocks, behind the scenes look at training camp. I think this Jeff Fisher Rams season was top three.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's been a bounce back season for them on that show.
Jeff Fisher was commenting on the Colin Kaepernick stuff from the weekend. Here's the deal. And I'm going to write about this in a blog later, and went into it in extensive detail earlier today. You're entitled to protest anything you want. Freedom of speech is what it is, and it's constitutionally guaranteed. So God bless you if you're an idiot. But I'm also entitled to be offended by your statement of protest. His statement of protest is simply to not stand for the national anthem. I think it's important. Because, as I said earlier, I think it's a way to salute the flag, salute the country you're blessed to live in. And in the case of Colin Kaepernick, probably in his own way, he could say thanks for the fact that he got a free college education and $19 million a year for 6 years. You're not getting that in every country. But he's chosen to not stand because he says the country oppresses people of color. We can improve on all levels, including areas where people of color are oppressed. I grew up around a lot of poor white folks. I can tell you there's a lot of oppression of poor white folks, too. I don't think a scorecard in this case matters. I just think he's made a poor choice. In regards to standing for the anthem, here's former Chicago Bear and head coach of the LA Rams, Jeff Fisher, with his thoughts.
National anthem, all right? You guys have been here before, understand. You understand our organizational philosophy, my philosophy with respect to the national anthem. Just so you young guys know, I'm going to show you a clip here and show you how we do it. Defense is on the left, offense is on the right. You got your helmets. I want your helmets under your left arm. If you don't have your helmets, that's fine. You're going to be on the white. Everybody else will be lined up behind you. Hang on, Larry, 1 second, okay? This is important to me. It's a respect thing, okay? It's a self-respect thing. It's a respect for your teammates. It's a respect for this game. It's respect for this country. This is important to us. This is what it looks like. Go ahead, Larry.
This demonstrating it now it's laid out. And that's the context or the general content of it. And keep in mind, that was 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, long before the Colin Kaepernick thing broke. Do you have to be of a certain age to respect the flag? I don't think so.
Well,
my 25-year-old son and my 29-year-old daughter never hesitate to stand and salute the flag during the anthem.
Oh, yeah, we've taught the kids you don't put the flags on the ground or may have it touch the floor.
I think you teach folks proper patriotism and etiquette by example as a parent, but I think the anthem matters. I think it's, you know, yeah, it's a tradition. There's no rules that govern it. But I think the NFL is completely hypocritical in regards to this as well because they don't want to punish Kaepernick in any way, shape, or form. They just encourage more of this to go on when they will go out of their way to say protests and celebrations are not welcome in the context of an NFL football game.
It will be interesting to see if other players now join in with Kaepernick in this week's game.
Based on the fallout, you would think no, but I'm not sure they won't.
I just think it's so disrespectful. It is absolutely disrespectful.
I
you know, if he wants to be part of the team and part of the organization, you know, like to your point earlier, set up a fund, you know, an organization, a fundraising.
What's he going to do now? What's he going to do now? Is he going to go to the neighborhoods? Yeah. Is he going to write a fat check? What's he going to do now?
Right.
It's not enough to sit on your keister. What are you going to do next?
Come to Chicago next weekend. We'll take him around some of the neighborhoods that need some help and perhaps a little bit of that $19 million.
He's taking the heat off Gabby Douglas for not holding her hand over her heart during the anthem.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember that controversy?
Two weeks ago.
What was her reasoning?
Like a year ago.
What was her
reasoning?
No,
she just
wasn't thinking about it at the time. And she's still a kid. He's not a kid at 27 or 28, and he's been in front. He has had anthems played before games since he was 18 years old and probably in high school as well. At 9:31, the new Sunday Night Football theme has been released by NBC. You remember Faye Dunaway. No, what's
Faith Hill.
Faith Hill.
Or Faye Dunaway.
Mommy Dearest.
You'll find when I don't know a name, I'll make one up. Faith Hill did the Sunday Night Football theme for a while. Apparently, she's too old now. So who have they brought in, Dave?
I'm not sure who they have. Is it
Carrie Underwood?
Carrie Underwood.
That's right, because Gwen Stefani's a terrible person. And Carrie Underwood does the thing. We'll play a little of this. Go ahead, roll it.
Stomp your feet, stop clapping. NBC Sunday night about to happen. America's game, been waiting all day. The best of the best have come to play. The game's all here, let's turn it up. It's the NFL, can't get enough. We got a battle tonight, a winner take all, ain't nothing.
It's fine. It's good. It's fine.
Yeah.
fun. It's not why you tune in, but, you know, maybe keeps you for another minute or two.
It's kind of similar to the other one. I mean, it's got sort of the same themes.
It kind of sounds like Loverboy. Loving every minute of it.
Spoken by the child from the 80s.
Whoa. First thing came to my mind.
Whoa. Unlike the Joan Jett ripoff that she stole last time.
What'd she steal?
I Hate Myself for Loving You.
That was Joan Jett?
Yeah. I Hate Myself for Loving You, and they made it Sunday night, whatever the words
were.
Well,
you should tell Joan. You know Joan Jett. You should
tell
her. Everybody.
I'm text her.
9:33, big story next. Bill and Wendy at 10 on WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Hey, Adam Hall.
Hi. Can you give us any insight into the plan for Thursday?
Not really.
What can you tell us about Barrett Jones, and is he ready if he needs to be?
Ready for what?
That's just the greatest. That and Kevin Powell's introduction that Jake put together all these various pieces for the show.
Kevin!
At 9:44, Adam Hogue joins us. You got a twitch from watching that game? You got some sort of flinch you can't get rid of? You thinking about suing the Bears for malpractice for you had to watch that game?
It was tough, but I had 4 hours of therapy afterwards on the beat Saturday, so... We talked to Hamp, we got it all worked out, and everything was fine.
It was great, because there was a chant that started with the crowd. 2, 4, 6, 8, we suck. I mean, it didn't rhyme with anything, it was just, that's all they did. You're writing about the biggest worry from this terrible game. How can you narrow it down to just one?
Yeah, I know, there's a long list, but, you know, I've been trying to be patient with this, because... Okay, a few practices go by in Bourbonnais, then a week goes by, then 2 weeks goes by, then the first preseason game, then the second preseason game, and then all of a sudden the third preseason game goes by too. And I'm just wondering, where are Kevin White and Leonard Floyd in all this? And I'm not trying to make anyone panic, but when Kyle Long joined the Bears as a rookie, you knew the third practice, and I went back and actually looked up what I wrote, and it was actually July 31st of that year. So they were only a few practices in, and I wrote right away, this guy can start week one. And with Kevin White, he's going to have to start, but I'm still kind of wondering where he is in, can he run all the routes? Are the Bears just hiding him right now? Because that's a possibility too, that they don't want to show too much on offense. But the production, only 3 catches on 8 targets in the first 3 preseason games is a little concerning to me, especially when he's had 2 drops and he had a miscommunication with Jay Cutler on Saturday too. And then with Leonard Floyd, his problem right now so far has been availability, right? I mean, he's had a shoulder injury, he's had a hamstring injury, he was sick at the start of training camp, and it's long way away from even talking about them possibly being busts. I just haven't been totally encouraged with their first preseason so far.
Well, you're being kind. I think this is one of the most disappointing 3-game stretches I've seen, and I know it's preseason, and I know it doesn't matter, but then why have preseason at all if it doesn't matter?
Yeah.
You got to evaluate somehow, and the only evaluation you come up with so far has been a massive S show.
Yeah, and let me clarify, too, on what I just said about Kevin White and Leonard Floyd. The reason why I single that out as the biggest worry is because it's one thing to look at this and say, okay, maybe John Fox and Ryan Pace got here to Chicago and didn't realize how bad of a situation it really was. Maybe they didn't realize that Phil Emery's 3 years here was as bad as it was, and they really did not have all that much talent. But these two guys are their first-round picks the last 2 years. They're the guys that they brought in, so they need to be able to play. And by the way, a lot of the second, third-rounders, later-rounders that Ryan Pace has brought in here in the last 2 years look like they can play. There's actually a lot of positives there, so that's a good thing. But these top 10 picks the last 2 years, they better be able to contribute, because they're not just first-rounders. They're top 10 guys, and they need to contribute sooner than later. So that's why, to me, that's kind of starting to stand out here. Now we're a full month into this thing since the Bears reported at training camp as somewhat of a concern as we head into the regular season.
Our coverage with Adam Hogue is sponsored by C.J. Wilson Mazda. The concern, Adam, is, I mean, it's one thing to go out and lay an egg in a preseason game. It's another thing to actually maybe regress from from the second preseason game to the third, which is the most important one. And now you've got less than 2 weeks till you're going to tee it up against the Houston Texans down in Houston. And How do you flip the switch? I mean, that's the big question because, yeah, I know it's only preseason, but it's hard to turn a team around that quickly.
Yeah, and the same thing kind of happened last year. I think it's a big advantage for to go up and practice against your opponent for three straight days. And the other team gets to do it too, right? So when the Bears did that against the Patriots a week ago, I think that really helped them. It helped them a year ago in Indianapolis too when they went up against the Colts. They played pretty well in the second preseason game, and then there was a little bit of a regression against the Bengals, who they played in the third preseason game last year, and then obviously a huge regression the other day against the Chiefs. So I don't know if that's contributing. It's not an excuse, and I don't think there's any negatives towards going out and practicing against another team. I'm not trying to say that. I just think that it's a little bit harder when the following week you don't get to practice against your opponent the whole week, and they are actually doing some game planning. And I think obviously the Chiefs got the best of the Bears in terms of the game planning the other day too. So you're absolutely right. And in terms of turning this thing around for week one against a good Houston Texans team that was in the playoffs last year, well, concerns. Now Tracy Porter has a concussion. Is he going to be ready to go by week one? What's Kyle Fuller's deal with his knee? Is he going to be ready to go by week one? And most importantly, what about Kyle Long? Is he ready to go by week one with that shoulder injury that he has? That's a guy who I think can play through things. I think he's going to try.
But then we kind of find out by accident Cornelius Edison might be a good center.
Well, I thought he looked fine the other day. You know, I didn't think that he...
It's a good name, too, isn't it? Cornelius Edison.
Mm-hmm. Cornelius Edison. And what a story he is. I wrote about it last week. Don't know if you guys saw it, but he...
I never miss a word that you write.
I know. I know you do, Steve. I appreciate that.
Yeah, but I'm a fan.
Kid out of Portland State. So first of all, I mean, who's heard of a football player from Portland State before? And he was actually projected to get drafted, but literally a few days before the draft, he tears his ACL. I mean, the worst possible timing to tear your ACL, especially when you're kind of an unknown coming out of Portland State. So he goes undrafted, goes unsigned. The Bears kept in touch with him all of last year. This was a year ago. This was in 2015. And when he got healed up and was able to pass his physical last November, the Bears signed him to the practice squad. So here he is, spends the whole offseason with the Bears, works his way up, gets some injuries that happen, and he gets thrown into the third preseason game. And I thought he played okay. I didn't think it was great. I didn't think he looked lost, though. And I think he's certainly going to make this team and at least be their backup center.
What happens with the backup, not necessarily second-string quarterback, because that would seem to be Brian Hoyer, although maybe he was going to get some push because Connor Shaw looked good. And what an awful way to lose him. I mean, not that there's any good injuries, but I mean, just the timing of it, everything. The one guy who'd given them a spark gets his season ended the way in it with a really gruesome injury.
Yeah, I mean, Connor Shaw was like one of two players that actually looked good in this game Saturday. And here he is driving. He's hitting Cam Meredith, who would be the other guy who I thought looked okay. Connor Shaw, Cam Meredith were driving down the field, scores a touchdown, and then Connor Shaw gets hurt in a gruesome injury where he breaks his leg. Now, I don't know if you guys were able to see the actual hit because they didn't show a replay on the broadcast, so you had to kind of dig for it online. But Connor Shaw briefly tweeted and then deleted yesterday that the hit was BS. That's what he called it on Twitter. I didn't think it was dirty. I thought it was just really bad tackling form that led to an awkward ending where the defender kind of landed on him and unfortunately ended with a broken leg. I didn't think it was dirty, but to lose Connor Shaw, who I think it clearly passed David Fales, and I had just written down in my notebook as I'm watching this game, should he actually be the backup instead of Brian Hoyer, who hasn't looked all that good? And then Connor Shaw gets hurt just a few moments later. So it'll be interesting what the Bears do this week because they might have to sign a quarterback if they don't want to play Brian Hoyer on Thursday. Otherwise, Hoyer's going to have to play.
I got less than a minute here, and I don't want to shortchange this, but any thoughts from you on Colin Kaepernick's situation or what you're hearing around the league?
Yeah, we talked about this weekend. The one thing I'll hit on, just because it was kind of cool to have Jarrett Payton with us yesterday, because Jarrett Payton played for Jeff Fisher, and I know you guys just played the audio from what Jeff Fisher said on Hard Knocks. So it was kind of cool to have his perspective on that, and it is totally just sort of a respect thing, and I like how Jeff Fisher brings his team to the line or to the sideline every time and lines up. Most teams do that. For whatever reason, the 49ers don't. And they're just kind of all scattered on there. So I think the cause and what Colin was going for is great. I respect that he did it. I just don't know if it was the greatest way to go about it.
It's Adam Hogg. Where do we read you?
WGNradio.com/Bears.
Brought to you by
CJ
Wilson Mawson.
All right, boys. Thank you very much. It's 9:53. Bill and Wendy next. I'll play one more piece of sound before we go. I was going to play the fried chicken commercial, the KFC commercial that ran when they were talking about race on MSNBC. I think somebody in the control room got fired. You're talking about race relations and Hillary and Trump firing at each other, and they played the George Hamilton KFC ad as opposed to a clip of Hillary. But I want to play this. Kanye West. Kanye West has really gotten his act together. You know, in the past, he's just gone off on tangents. I think if you listen to this VMA speech last night from the Video Music Awards, talks about violence and, you know, how he can help. I think you get a sense of this. And Colin Kaepernick could probably learn from this. Listen.
If you feel like you're seeing people dying right next to you, you might feel like, what's the point? What's the, you know, like life could be like, start to feel worthless in a way. Like I know times for me, I sit down and talk to older, like rich people, you know, aka white, you know, but and they tell me, don't compare yourself to Steve Jobs, don't compare yourself to Walt Disney. One of the keys, it's three keys to keeping people impoverished. That's taking away their esteem, taking away their resources, and taking away their role models. My role models are artists, merchants, Truman, Ford, Hughes, Disney, Jobs, West.
So Kanye West's role model is Kanye West?
Right. Well, of course. Who else would be his role model? Himself.
West.
Yeah. Do you think anybody in the crowd went, I have a headache. This isn't making any sense.
I don't know why.
I mean, other than Kim Kardashian?
Right. And that went on for like 11 minutes.
Hi.
Why do they think that we want to hear any of that?
Kanye did really good. I don't know what you said. Hi. 9:58, back with Bill and Wendy next on 720 WGN.